Welcome to the Birds of Alberta podcast. I'm Chris Fisher, co-author of the best-selling field guide, Birds of Alberta, and today also the Reptiles and Amphibians of Canada. You know, I was very lucky going to school at the University of Alberta in the zoology department. One of the most important vertebrate zoology courses, had excellent professors and really impressive teaching assistants as well. And how lucky was I to have Carl Larson as a TA, who went on to be a professor at the university in Kamloops, and also Murnal Das, who has worked for years and years as a professor at Grant MacEwan University in the biology department. I remember well one lab session when Carl introduced the topic by sharing this story. You see, he did his PhD on red-sided garter snakes in Wood Buffalo National Park. That's as far north as they go. And as a researcher, he needed something to feed his red-sided garter snakes that he had in captivity. And you really couldn't go to the pet store to buy crickets in Fort Chip or Fort Smith. So he instead found something super abundant to feed his snakes, and that was wood frogs. In reality, Wood Buffalo National Park should really be called Wood Frog National Park because wood frogs are so abundant into this landscape. So Carl would collect these wood frogs and he would put them in the freezer and thaw them out to feed them to his snakes. And one day he took out of the freezer a Tupperware container, opened the lid, took out one of the frozen popsicle wood frogs, tapped it on the table like you would an egg, and then proceeded to leave for the field for the entire day. When Carl eventually returned to his laboratory later that afternoon, he noticed that all the frogs in the Tupperware container had mysteriously vanished, leaving only the cracked egg one lying lifeless on the counter. And you see, what Carl found out that day is one of the most fascinating things among the wildlife Alberta. Not one of them knows the secret of coming back from the dead. That death denier is actually our common, everyday wood frog. Alberta really may be one of the last places you think of when you start talking about amphibians throughout the world. We only have 10 species. Compare that to Costa Rica, which has 215 species. And boy, the whole country of Costa Rica could fit within the Panoka rodeo grounds. But our two main species are pretty ecologically important and widespread. They are the wood frog and also a smaller little frog that's quite vocal, and that's called the boreal chorus frog. And in truth, of these two species, one is seen but not heard, that's the wood frog. The other one is heard but not seen, and that's the boreal chorus frog. Let's have a listen to both. Now, the reason why the voices are so important in these frogs, it's how they communicate with each other and the outside world. And you'll notice that the wood frog sounds just a little bit like a quacking duck. That's very appropriate because they start their croaking early in April and will continue through the end of the month. They'll start obviously sooner in the southern areas of the province, but in the central region of Alberta, I always think of them croaking around the time the Snow Goose Festival rolls around in Tollfield, and that's around the last week or so of April. Oftentimes there's still ice on the edges of the ponds when the wood frogs start up, and eventually the ice will melt around about the time that the wood frogs choose to lay their eggs. The mating and the courtship activities of the wood frog really never lasts all that long. It's really one of our first indicators of spring. Usually it occurs in meltwater ponds where the brown vegetation hasn't had a chance yet to turn to green. There you'll find the wood frogs jostling with one another, cackling, and you'll actually see the sides of their necks inflate and deflate in response to the noises they produce. Wood frogs seem to like a lot of group action when it comes to courtship and breeding, as you rarely see just a pair by itself and usually rarely see an egg mass by itself. You usually see often many, many of them clustered together in the warmest part of the wetlands. Always a big mystery to me how they can produce such large egg masses. I know they're mostly water, but for a frog that's really about the size of a mini carrot, they lay an egg mass that can be at least the size of a baseball, if not a softball. So that's a pretty impressive feat. So their breeding strategy and reproductive strategy really comes down to getting a head start on the spring, laying a whole bunch of eggs, and then skedaddling back to land. There is, of course, no parental care offered whatsoever to the eggs. And later, the tadpoles, this is, clinically speaking, in ecological terms, an R-selected species. These are species that produce large numbers of low-effort babies, and they contribute very little resources to each of their individual offspring. The R, by the way, stands for reproduction, but it really should stand for rest in peace, because these young don't have much of a chance at surviving at all. But this lottery system of reproduction is a pretty effective strategy, used, of course, in insects and fish and many species of invertebrates. And it does prove to be quite successful in contributing to a large population in Alberta and throughout North America. They're found as far south as the Appalachian Mountains, but this is truly an animal of northern areas. It's the northernmost frog in the world. And as such, it is a fascinating example of ecological adaptability. And perhaps what makes wood frogs so successful in northern areas in particular is what Carl observed on that tabletop in Wood Frog National Park so many years ago, is because they're probably the closest example we have to something known as anastasis, coming back from the dead. And unlike Lazarus, wood frogs don't require divine intervention. They only need a bit of warmth to bring them back from the depths of winter. You see, wood frogs have this incredible ability to be freeze tolerant, or cryo tolerance. And the secret lies in their ability to produce large amounts of glucose from their liver, which permeates their bodies as soon as ice crystals begin to form on the outside of their skin. The high levels of glucose, often 100 times the normal concentration, does two things. It acts a little bit as an antifreeze, so it slows down the freezing process, and it also draws the water that's inside the cells to outside of the cells, so that the cells themselves will not freeze, expand, and break open. Ice does form, but it forms in the intracellular areas of the wood frog, thus preventing it from crystallizing and damaging the internal organs. In these frozen stages, 65 to 75% of all their total body water has been frozen in the extracellular ice masses. In fact, they have no vital signs detectable at all. There's no heartbeat, they're not breathing, there's no blood circulating, nor is there any muscle movement or detectable brain activity whatsoever. And while cryogenesis in wood frogs has got to be one of the coolest things that we see in wildlife of Alberta, it actually has a greater purpose. You know, this has been studied intently for the last 30 or 40 years. So as to unlock the secrets to better preserve organs that are destined for transplantation and donation, and to cure diabetes. You know, humans get in pretty rough shape when there's only 10% normal glucose levels, and boy, these wood frogs can tolerate 10 times that much. But to be honest, I have to admit that I have a really soft spot for wood frogs. Like many of Albertans who were raised in this province, it really was probably the very first frog that I ever saw as a kid, caught as a kid. Quite frankly, boreal chorus frogs, the one that's commonly heard, they're so tiny and elusive, we hardly see them at all. So aside from that initial childhood connection to wood frogs in the province of Alberta, it was really one of my first working experiences. One of my very first field contracts was with Ducks Unlimited of the North American Waterfowl Management Plan. And Ducks Unlimited is obviously very interested in waterfowl and waterfowl numbers, but they manage so many wetlands across the landscape of Alberta that they're always interested in what else is doing well and how their wetland conservation is benefiting non-target species. And the ability to get paid by Ducks Unlimited so many decades ago to drive around the province in my crappy car and then doing surveys for amphibians around dozens and dozens of Ducks Unlimited wetlands in central Alberta from the Stettler area up to Camrose and really getting a particular insight on the amount of biodiversity that these protected wetlands provide, not only for the waterfowl, but also so many other ecologically important species. Because if you have frogs around, you likely have very, very good water. Water sources in Alberta are susceptible to industrial contamination, of course. Oh, they disappear quite quickly whenever there's urbanization. We frankly don't have many frogs at all, withstanding the urbanization that we see in our larger cities here in Alberta. And they also don't do particularly well when cattle get in their breeding ponds. All the pocking and muddying up of the waters really strangulates them, being unable to breathe when they're in their aquatic tadpole form that requires highly dissolved oxygen levels in those ponds. My soft spot for wood frogs has another major target, and it was fully realized when I had an opportunity to host a television show way back in the early 2000s. I was produced by Ava Karvinen and her Real Girls team, and the show was called Wildfiles.tv. And because of the soft spot for wood frogs, our pilot episode, the very first episode, featured, well, wood frogs. And not only did they feature a bunch of facts and fun stories about wood frogs, but the intent of Wildfiles was to finish every episode with a song about the particular subject that we covered. So without any hesitation, here from that first episode of so many years ago is Bob the Wood Frog, written by myself and co-written by the extraordinarily and talented musical genius Michael Becker.
Frog Bobby sat on a log and watched the time fly by, till his stomach said, I must be fed, and it groaned as fly time by. That summer it seemed was like a dream on that forest floor, cause bugs and lice and ticks and mites were going from his front door. See, Wood Frog Bob couldn't read or jog, he couldn't talk and he couldn't blog, the draining of a bog. This is that frog's epilogue, and what became of Bob? Bob the Wood Frog. Then fall came round and on the ground the leaves fell from the air, and the bugs and lice and ticks and mites, they began to be quite rare. Then his life was tossed when that there frost made the forest still, so he did creep and dug in deep right under a leafy hill. See, Wood Frog Bob couldn't read or jog, he couldn't talk and he couldn't block the draining of a bog. This is that frog's epilogue, and what became of Bob? Bob the Wood Frog. From beneath that hill Bob felt a chill as the snow piled high, while the winter froze within him, rose some glycogen in his thigh. This antifreeze, well, it did ease the long, long winter days. See, Bob froze up like an ice cream cup until sometime in May. See, Wood Frog Bob couldn't read or jog, he couldn't talk and he couldn't blog the draining of a bog. This is that frog's epilogue, and what became of Bob? Bob the Wood Frog. Spring came round and that there ground began to warm right up. Bob did awake, then did migrate to join the puddle hop. And at that Sioux Bob sure knew that he would find a mate. And with his song, it wasn't long till he did consummate. Seawood Frog Bob couldn't read or jog. He couldn't talk and he couldn't block the draining of a bog. This is a frog's final epilogue. And what became of Bob? Bob the Wood Frog. Seawood Frog Bobby couldn't read or jog, but he could eat and he did sleep, and his kids now fill that bog. But when Bob went to find his summer log, the last thing that saw Bob is a garter snake.
Well, I hope that our little upbeat kids tune there got you in a frog-loving mood, even if at the end of the song I did kill off our hero. But Bob, like all wood frogs, alive, dead, or somewhere in between, they deserve our admiration here in the province. And there's no better time to get the feels for this most remarkable amphibian than in April. It's appropriately known by the Cree as Aegypeesum, the month of the frog moon as well. So that couldn't be a more perfect time for everyone to go out and make a miracle of your very own in connecting with Alberta's wood frog.